Mozart wrote his 41st and last symphony, nicknamed the Jupiter, in 1788, 3 years before his death. The final movement of this symphony is variously hailed as the quintessential example of craftsmanship in Western music, a product of ingenuity, unimaginable, limitless, the greatest orchestral work of the world which preceded the French Revolution. You get the picture. While I have played the symphony sometime in the distant past, I had not registered its significance before my conductor told me that they say it contains the greatest 30 seconds of music ever written. Here they are. So, what's the fuss about? In a word, counterpoint. Harmony in music is where two or more sounds are played simultaneously and sound well or not so well together. Broadly, there are two types of harmony. The first type consists of sounds that complement a main melody. The second type consists of multiple melodies played simultaneously. In this second type, harmony occurs between the sounds of the independently moving melodies. This type of musical writing is called counterpoint. Counterpoint was very popular in the Baroque era and was showcased in different types of music composers composed. One such type was called a fugue. This fugue was written by Johann Sebastian Bach. It's like a children's round, like Frère Jacques. It begins with a short melodic statement in voice 1. This statement is then repeated by voice 2 as voice 1 continues playing. Then voice 3 comes in with the same statement, and so on. No one voice is subservient to another. They are all important and independent, and yet they sound well when sung or played at the same time. This was Bach, and we're not talking about Bach, we're talking about Mozart, but it's helpful to have a working idea of an example of counterpoint in the shape of a fugue. It's also worth emphasizing that counterpoint was initially rejected by classical composers, who emphasized clarity and simplicity of form. The convolutions of multiple interweaving voices was far too intellectual and mystical for the Viennese public of the late 18th century. They wanted singable tunes with straightforward accompaniments, like this aria from The Marriage of Figaro. None of this means that Mozart didn't study counterpoint, much less that he couldn't pull it off, and that is exactly what he does in the finale of the Jupiter. In this movement, he writes astoundingly complex counterpoint while shaping his music in the mainstream Viennese musical form of the time, known as sonata form. The composer begins, simply enough, with a gently rising opening phrase, a kind of question perfectly balanced by the rhythmic energy of a four-bar answering phrase. So So far, everything is properly classical: melody, accompaniment, balance and simplicity. To those listeners in the know, however, the opening four notes have already conjured up the spectre of counterpoint, since they have been used by other composers in fugues. Joseph Haydn, for example, uses the theme as the subject of a fugue in his 13th symphony. Back to Mozart's Jupiter Symphony. The opening theme is repeated loudly, and the timpani brings the section to an end. Out of this ending comes another ending, a scale descending down. This descending scale will reappear many, many times, and regardless of where it appears, it will feel like a final statement. Here, the final statement ushers forth its repeat, a third above, and then another repeat, creating an extended chord of C major. Again, there is a finality to this music. Within the first 30 seconds, the movement has already ended twice. And once again, out of this end comes a new beginning, the opening phrase played as a solo line. Here the phrase has become the subject of a fugue. The second violins play it first, then the first violins, then the violas, cellos, and finally double bass. You will notice, however, that Mozart does not allow the statement to be completed. He cuts it off each time at the fourth bar, swapping out the final note with a graceful, dance-like descending figure, which utterly disarms the gravitas of the fugal subject and propels the music forward as each voice trips over the next in its eagerness to state the melody, always one bar too early. I think this is a sublime moment. Listen carefully to the entries one after another as your ear is drawn back and forth between the opening theme and the tripping eighth notes. Before you know what has happened, the whole orchestra is stating the theme in unison. From the midst of this statement, a new figure emerges. I will call it the bridge theme. It is truly joyous as its iterations descend in sequence. The bridge theme inevitably lands on the familiar descending scale theme, played twice, in case we didn't quite catch it. We have now moved from C major to G major, an important stage in a sonata form movement, and this is where we would now expect a contrasting theme. The G major theme we get is not what I would call contrasting. It's softer and more lyrical, but as more of a fugue-like statement than a melody, it retains the character of everything that has come before. Any contrast that this tune might offer is immediately diminished by a new, energetic four-note phrase in the oboes, a return of the rising bridge theme in the bassoons, and once again the descending scale theme in the flutes. Mozart brings all of these disparate fragments together in a contrapuntal whole at the very moment he is stating a key feature of sonata form. The effect is to minimize the idea of development and difference, central to sonata form, and emphasize uniformity. To recap, then, there are five themes. The opening theme, the descending scale theme, the bridge theme, the G major theme, and the brief and barely discernible oboe theme, which is listed among the themes because it appears in the famous 30 seconds of music at the end of the movement. Mozart has woven all of these themes using counterpoint into the musical narrative known as sonata form. Sonata form has three sections. We've just listened to the exposition. Next comes the development, where the material from the exposition is varied. And the final section is called the recapitulation, a repeat of the exposition. Since Mozart has been playing with the relationships between his themes from the very beginning of the music, the development has been ongoing. Now it continues. We begin with the opening theme, but it is the descending theme and its rising inversion that dominates this section, hitting the listener from all directions as the instruments of the orchestra pass it hurriedly between them. There is beauty as the woodwinds persist with the poignant contrapuntal renderings of the opening theme while the strings hammer away with the ever-present descending theme. The final note of a particularly sensitive version of the descending theme becomes the first note of the opening theme. And we have the recapitulation. Almost immediately, the music starts to shift, to modulate. Strident iterations of the four-note theme are played in counterpoint. The harmony produced by this counterpoint and the rising chromatic figures in the woodwind is quite startling. A moment of real dissonance and angst. It comes from nowhere and disappears as quickly as it came. There is a moment of radiance as dystopian chaos dissolves into the joyous upward rising bridge theme, its iterations descending like peals of bells. The mood is buoyant, a sense that we are joyfully reaching the end. But then that has been the mood from the start. Flurries of running eighth notes and the forward energy of the second half of the opening theme, together with the inversion of the omnipresent descending scale, drives us rejoicing to the end. One last time, out of the end emerges a beautiful version of the opening theme, heard by me at least as a moment of respite from the descending theme. Now an energetic forte version of the G major theme enters, in counterpoint with a statement of the opening theme. It is quickly joined by the rising bridge theme, the oboe theme, and the descending theme. Mozart keeps all of these five elements in play, independent of one another and yet together, the so-called 30 greatest seconds in music. And so, finally, the statement of finality, the final descending scale, is truly final. The movement ends triumphantly in C major. But is it triumphant? My analysis is perhaps crude. I am no musicologist. My aim was to work out what is going on and what all the fuss is about. There is no doubt in my mind that this is an extraordinarily sophisticated piece of music, one in which Mozart demonstrates his craftsmanship, his simultaneous mastery of counterpoint, the style of a bygone era, and his mastery of the Viennese sonata form. But what I am listening for is not craftsmanship. I am listening for beauty, joy, meaning the sublime. There are sublime moments in this movement, but they are constantly overshadowed, overwhelmed even, by the constant repetitions of the descending scale of C major. There are moments that the music seems to me to fly gloriously, sublimely above the heaviness of the day-to-day, as it does in so many of Mozart's works, but then I am brought back down to the heaviness by this descending scale, time and again. What, I asked, was Mozart playing at? Did he unwittingly sacrifice beauty for sophistication, meaning for craftsmanship? Or did he know what he was doing? This was his last symphony. Was he being ironic? I can only conjecture. Perhaps it was a critique of the tyranny of musical form, whose predictable march down the diatonic scale governed the pattern all sonata movements. Was it a critique of society whose inescapable rules and expectations caged him in and would eventually cause his premature death in poverty? Or was it the dull recognition of the seeming reality of life, the inescapable descending C major scale, the inevitability of death? Understood in light of these interpretations, the triumphant sounds of the closing bars seem hollow. And yet there are moments of sublime beauty in this movement. Moments that will fill the works of his final 3 years of life. You have been listening to a Music Listening Project podcast with me, Mark Whale. The recording of Mozart's Jupiter Symphony No. 41 was by Harmut Hintgen and the Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach Chamber Orchestra. Adam Fischer and the Austro-Hungarian Haydn Orchestra performed Haydn's 13th Symphony in D major, and Bach's G minor fugue for organ was performed by Charlie Brusquini. Thank you for tuning in.